Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be talking about the first Yip Man movie. Lots of gems, lots of wrong bloody knuckles, lots of Cantonese with a Boston accent. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Sifu. Feeling stronger than a Nifco on Viagra.
That's a dangerous thing, by the way. So here we are. We're going to do another special topic here.
All right.
Rather than doing our normal Ask Me Anything episode. And because I have to go to work after today's episode, I thought I would dress up a little bit.
What do you mean?
Well, not to be outdone, you know, but you've been trying to make me look like a straight ass on the last few episodes. And I think,
yo,
you know.
I just noticed you got on the tux. Yo,
I'm pretty sure you helped me put the bow tie on, but yeah, good job there. Which is not even straight, by the way. Do you try to sabotage me there?
Wait. So you had him help you put your bow tie on when I had to be the one to help him put his tie on.
Yeah, but this did not need to be tied or anything special.
It's like one of those.
It came with two bow ties. One that you actually have to like know how to tie it, and then the other one was already ready to go. We used that one.
For the children.
I don't know anything about tying bow ties. So
not a clip-on.
So anyway, rather than doing our normal Ask Me Anything episode, I thought, you know, people ask me to do like some movie stuff every now and again. Now I'm not like a movie snob. There's lots of people out there who,
I am.
Yeah, I know, clearly. All right. You know, you should probably do this episode then, right?
Right.
So, you know, there are a lot of people out there, like, their whole thing is movies, Hong Kong cinema, like, they're really, obviously, highly specialized in this topic. They can tell you who the entire crew was and the conditions from which they shot it and all the background stuff. I'm not that guy. I'm a martial arts maniac. I'm a kung fu nerd. I'm a Wing Chun instructor. So, obviously, growing up with martial art films are definitely something that I'm super interested in, but I'm not like the guy that knows every single thing about all the films and stuff. I know some stuff, but when it comes into my backyard, like, you know, in Wing Chun, I like to talk about it because people ask me all the time what I think about the IP Man movies, aka the Yip Man movies. And so I thought, well, why don't we start talking about them maybe individually, right? This allows us to stretch out our content
over multiple
episodes.
Who comes to mind for me is the Kung Fu Santa.
Kung Fu Santa, Rick Myers, yeah, obviously. And then you have, well, now it's like, it's different because you have all sorts of podcasts now. There are podcasts that are popping up everywhere.
Okay.
Podcasts on Fire. You have like all these Hong Kong, you know, Hong Kong-based podcasts on films where they're talking about this stuff all the time. And you realize that, yeah, I mean, like in the old days, you had Rick Myers, you had Bay Logan, you had Toby Russell, you had the guys out there who are like the kind of, you know, first generation experts. And now there are all sorts of people who are out there who just you have grown up listening to and reading all the stuff from those guys and have now taken it to another level. So, you know, this is definitely not my attempt to compete with those guys. If you want to have like full breakdowns on the films and the background and the actors and how all that stuff was set up, like I'm not that dude. But the Yip Man movies obviously are about Yip Man, someone near and dear to my heart as a Wing Chun instructor. And so, like, you know, I often get asked what I think about these things. And so I thought, well, I'll talk a little bit about what I do know about the movie and what kind of impact the film had on my school and everything. And then I thought we would maybe go through a couple of the key fight scenes. And I'd, maybe offer my commentary as a Wing Chun instructor, and we could kind of talk about it and see how it kind of stacks up.
All right. Can I join you in his commentary,
though? Well, I wouldn't be talking to myself, so
right, sure.
So, you know, with the Ip Man movies, obviously now they did the finale, which was Ip Man 4. You know, my feelings on the Ip Man franchise are, I haven't hid them on this podcast.
Right.
I think the first Ip Man movie is great. I think it's a good film. It's got good action. It doesn't bother me that much that it takes a lot of creative license with the actual story of Ip Man, which I can get into. My issue really comes from Ip Man 2 through 4, where that's just kind of like where I think all three of those sequels kind of jumped the shark in terms of the story, right? I know a lot of people like the second Ip Man movie because it takes place in Hong Kong, and it essentially tells the one part of the story that we really do know anything about. You know, Ip Man's life before 1949, before he came from China to Hong Kong, is really a big kind of dark box of like kind of we know a few things. We know some broad strokes about his wife, and we know some stuff from what his sons have talked about and a little bit about what he divulged to his students over time. But there are no photos of Grandmaster Ip Man, to my knowledge, before he came to Hong Kong in 1949. So you don't find photos of him in China or in Fatsan. Now, what they may exist and they've never come to light, or they may simply not exist, we don't know. But we really don't know anything about Ip Man until 1949. I mean, nothing for sure where we can actually say, okay, this is what he did and this is where he was. So it's interesting that the first movie, which essentially tells Ip Man's story prior to coming to Hong Kong, which is the part of his story that we know the least about, happens to be the one part of the franchise that I like the most.
All right.
Because when we get to the portion of his life in movies 2, 3, and 4 that we do actually have a record of, that goes the most off the rails in terms of having anything to do with his life. Now, I understand, you know, before people kind of attack me on this, like, well, these things are movies and they're supposed to make money. I understand. No one ever accused the Ip Man makers of making a documentary film. I get it, all right? My issue is that you can actually look at Ip Man's real life, of which he had a lot of struggles and he had a lot of very interesting story beats, to use that kind of script writing language, that could be expanded upon, that you don't need to make shit up to the extreme that they went to. I mean, you know, Ip Man 2 was just like a bad Rocky movie with the, you know, the twister, the Westerner that he had to fight at the end in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ip Man 3 with Mike Tyson.
Well, he played a legit character.
Yeah. Tyson. There were a lot of wealthy African-American landowners in Hong Kong in the 60s.
Yeah,
very specific tattoos on their faces.
Very specific tattoos on their faces, right?
Yeah, I heard that was legit.
Like, if Mike Tyson wasn't Mike Tyson, all right, he never became this famous boxer, but obviously he exists. He has the same tattoo on his face. He shows up in Hong Kong. Now, in 2021, everyone would look at this guy with this face tattoo walking down and go like, oh my God, look at this guy in Hong Kong, right?
Yeah.
Because he would be such an oddity. Put that guy in the 60s in Hong Kong and everyone would be losing their minds, okay? So, I mean, every time I've brought, you know, I bring students of mine to Hong Kong, like multiple times brought students of mine who are black to Hong Kong, and like, we're just right. on the subway and like, they just get stared at.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what is that, right?
That's what happens to me.
Yeah, and uncomfortably so, right, to the point where I sometimes have to say something like, you know, like, it's going to cost you money if you keep staring. You know what I mean? Like
in Cantonese?
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is sometimes even I get stared at. And I'm like, first of all, there are plenty of white dudes in Hong Kong, plenty of foreigners.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, it's a Chinese cultural thing. Like, if they find something interesting or unique about you, they'll just kind of stare at you. All right? In a way that if that happened in New York, you'd expect to get punched in the face in about 5 seconds if you stared at someone that long on the subway. Yeah, you're on the today, even this morning, I was on my phone and I'm doing my Spanish, right? Uh-huh. And I was like looking across and I happened to be looking at someone, but I wasn't like paying any attention.
Zoned out.
I was zoned out doing my Spanish. And like she looked at me. She had this Chinese girl with a mask on. She looked at me and she gave me this look. And then I was like, oh, geez, sorry, right? Meanwhile, in Hong Kong, you know, if you sit there, it's like perfectly normal to get stared at like this, you know? So you have to learn a couple lines. Like if you want to stare at the guailo, you got to pay money. That'll get them to stop staring immediately, all right? So you have to have like a couple throwaway lines ready to go, right? So it's literally
they don't want to stare pay money, at so
the
they look away.
Stare at the guailo. Yeah. You need to pay money, right? And then you know they get embarrassed because you say it in their language, right? And it's like you catch them, right? So anyway, so Ip Man 2, I also thought the choreography took a nosedive in the sequels. The choreography of the first Ip Man movie, in my opinion, is the most solid of the bunch, with one small exception. In Ip Man 3. His nemesis, you know, played by Max Chang, who's like a rival Wing Chun guy or whatever. I actually felt that Max Chang's Wing Chun in Ip Man 3 was way better than Donnie Yen's. Ooh. And I felt that he actually outshined Donnie as a Wing Chun practitioner in that film. And so it was kind of weird that he was like the bad guy, and I thought his Wing Chun actually looked way tighter than Donnie's, right? Shit. Donnie's Wing Chun seemed to get looser and sloppier the more money he made with each coming sequel. He seemed to give less a crap because it was just like, this is just printing money at this point for him, right? Yeah. But it definitely seems like in the first movie, he still really gave a crap. So that's why I figured what better place to start than with the first Ip Man movie. Now, I've been around long enough to remember that they had actually been talking about making a Ip Man movie for a while before they even made it. The first Ip Man, so the Donnie Yen Ip Man 1 came out in 2008, end of 2008. And I remember for a few years on some of the websites they had talked about doing it, and Wong Kar-wai, who eventually made his movie The Grandmaster, he had actually talked about making it before the Donnie Yen one. And but Wong Kar-wai, he's an art house director, and he notoriously takes like a very long time to do things. So he had talked about it for a while and talked and talked and talked, but never really got around to doing it. And I believe Tony Leung already had taken one or two lessons with Yip Chun. They had, which was more of a photo op to say, oh, he's going to play Yip Man. But that was way back in maybe 2003, 2004. There were already photos of Tony Leung, you know, doing some Wing Chun or standing next to Yip Chun at the Wing Chun Athletic Association. But Wong Kar-wai, you know, is famously kind of very slow in his process. And so eventually, from what I understood, they just decided that Donnie and Sammo and Raymond Wong, the producer, they were like, let's make this Ip Man movie, right? Mm. So they weren't going to wait for Wong Kar-wai to do his. They were going to go and make theirs. And they originally, I think, wanted to use the title Yat Toi Chung Si Ip Man, which is Yat Toi Chung Si, literally means, it can mean grandmaster loosely, and it's actually the title of Wong Kar-wai's film. Yat Toi means one generation. Chung Si means so it means like the grandmaster of a generation, and it's an honorific title pretty much for any grandmaster. Mm. But they called theirs like Yat Toi Chung Si Ip Man. And Wong Kar-wai's movie was Yat Toi Chung Si. And so they just added the Ip Man there, and Wong Kar-wai got pissed. Oh. And he threatened litigation and threatened to sue them. And that's when they just changed it to Ip Man. But they were basically, not only did they kind of like go over his head, I mean, it's a competing film company, it doesn't really matter, but they decided he wants to make the movie, he's taking his time, we're going to go make it. But they were like, hold my beer, let's just take his title or for his movie. And then Wong Kar-wai squawked about that. And then they basically had to, that's when they had to change it to Ip Man only, right? And that was like kind of some of this. But even before Wong Kar-wai wanted to make his Ip Man movie, which from what I remember, maybe early 2000s, 2003, I remember reading some stuff about it online. There was a short-lived film company in the 90s called Cinemagic. Okay. And they had only made one or two movies that had kind of flopped. And that's why that company is not around anymore.
Cool title, though.
It is a cool title.
Name. Cinemagic.
So they wanted to make, they were already proposing to make a Ip Man movie back then. This is maybe 1997.
Oh.
And originally, they wanted to make a Ip Man movie.
The Dragon Part 2.
They wanted to make a Ip Man movie with Donnie Yen and Stephen Chow. All right, Stephen Chow, the comedian actor from Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer, right? And which is crazy, right? If you imagine that. Thing is, they had not yet really decided who one of them was going to play Bruce Lee and the other one was going to play Ip Man. But they didn't decide, okay, which one is going to be which. According to Bay Logan's 36 Chambers book, where he goes into all the different, his favorite films, right?
Yeah.
He talks about it. He gives a little bit of background. He said that he was there when Stephen Chow and Donnie Yen were having a conversation as to which one would play Bruce Lee and which one would have to age up to play Yip Man, right? So, and also said, well, can you imagine, I mean, that movie ended up not getting made, but can you imagine going back like into an alternate timeline and seeing a Yip Man movie with Stephen Chow and Donnie Yen from the late 90s, right? And let's assume maybe Stephen Chow decided to play Yip Man.
Yeah.
Right? So he would age up to play Yip Man, which I think probably would have been a better choice. Although it's weird to imagine Stephen Chow in any kind of role that's not a comedy role, right? Whereas Donnie Yen, you can imagine him doing it. Donnie Yen has also played the Bruce Lee role in, you know, in I think Legend of the Fist, which was basically a continuation of Fist of Fury, but with a little, some Kato elements in there. And then he was also in a TV series, Fist of Fury, which was a remake of Bruce Lee's Fist of Fury, but done as a long-form TV series with multiple episodes where he played the Tenzin Bruce Lee's character, right? So he's already done, like, the Bruce Lee role, so it was so it would be interesting to see that, right? But I can imagine what I think is they've kind of shied away from portraying Bruce Lee too much in more recent years because the Lee estate tends to occasionally be litigious when people try to use Bruce Lee's name or likeness. So they always try to find some ways around it. And I've heard that that was one of the reasons why they decided to later pursue Yip Man's story, because it was a way to kind of maybe sneak in Bruce Lee references around the side door without just making a straight out Bruce Lee movie and have to then deal with the estate. I mean, even when they made Bruce Lee, My Brother, which was written by Bruce's brother and sister.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, which is one of the most accurate of all the biopics on Bruce Lee. And it also doesn't depict Bruce Lee as some indestructible person who is basically just one of the characters in his films. It actually humanizes him, and it's a very realistic portrayal of Bruce Lee. And some people didn't like it because they're expecting to see an action movie, as if Bruce Lee's, you know, life in, you know, pre-America Hong Kong was an action movie, and it wasn't. I thought it was really good, but literally in the opening frames of that film, Robert, his brother, and Phoebe, the sister, they essentially have what's akin to a disclaimer about this is our story and yada, 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 because the Lee estate has tried to stop that film and they did everything in their power to kind of block the U.S. distribution on that. So I think that's why some film companies in the past were a little worried about doing stuff straight about Bruce Lee, because Linda and Shannon are notoriously horrible with that stuff. They will sue the pants out of people who want to do legitimate stuff about their father.
Damn.
And meanwhile, they will write off on stuff like that terrible Chinese TV series, which is totally inaccurate, and they'll sell his image to Johnny Walker and stuff like that. You know, like, that stuff is cool. Yeah. But like his brother and sister wanting to make a film, an honest film about his life, they're going to put pressure on that, right? So it just seems a bit, the Lee estate can be very disingenuous in terms of what they decide to do and pursue and not pursue and so on. So anyway, yeah, in the late 90s, there was this proposed Donnie Yen, Stephen Chow Yip Man movie, which would have been super, yeah, would have been super interesting. I mean, like, you know, which one would have played which character? So where would that have gone, right? So eventually, Raymond Wong, as a producer, he decided, okay, he wants to pursue this Yip Man movie. They knew that Wong Kar Wai's film was going to portray Yip Man in a more dramatic role, because that's Wong Kar Wai's thing. He's an art house director. He's going to make, and you've seen The Grandmaster. Mm-hmm. It's a much more dramatic film, and they knew that that was going to be Wong Kar-wai's strong suit. So they decided, Raymond Wong decided, well, they should portray Yip Man more as a martial arts hero to kind of counter what they assume was, because remember, Wong Kar-wai's film had not come out yet. They're only kind of assuming what it's going to be like. So they wanted to do something opposite to what they would have assumed he would have done. So they wanted to obviously push him more as a martial arts hero rather than as a dramatic actor. And like, hey man, I love Donnie Yen, but he's not really a dramatic actor. Every other line in most of his movies is, Fatsang Mesia, which is what's going on. You know, you can peel this line out of a bunch of Yip Man movies and a bunch of other movies. I'm sure someone could make a mashup clip of Donnie Yen just saying Fatsang Mesia, which is like, what's going on? What's going on? As if like that, like Donnie Yen's main line in most movies is like what's going on. He's a guy who doesn't know what's going on. That's the character he always plays, right? So
asking hand man.
Yeah, exactly, right? So so eventually they do it, and again, I think the first Yip Man movie, because it was a bit of a labor of love, they wanted to make this movie about Yip Man, and you have obviously you have Sammo Hung's choreography, and they had other consultants on there as well, Sing Kwok Lam and some other Wing Chun related people through Yip Chun, the son, who are you know helping with the choreography and stuff, and you know going through some great pains to make it authentic. And you have a few fight scenes in that film. There's a bunch of little skirmishes here and there, whatever. But for me, the ones that kind of stand out are like the first fight scene where that other master, Liu Sifu, comes over to kind of challenge him, and they have a friendly challenge. And he's like, oh, before we have the challenge, why don't you sit down and eat? And Liu Sifu's there eating with his family, basically waiting for the challenge. And then they, oh, by the way, spoiler alert. Do I need to say spoiler alert on this old-ass movie? I don't know how these things, I don't know what the rules of the internet are on these things, all right?
You should always say spoiler alert.
Yes.
People still say spoiler alert about like, Star Wars. A New Hope, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, look, so.
I'm a little confused because you keep saying Yip Man when I believe the name of the movie is IP Man.
Yeah, so for me, Yip Man is the real-life martial arts instructor who taught Wing Chun to people like Bruce Lee and Wong Sun Leung and all these people,
so
right?
So it's not IP Man.
And IP Man is a fictional character based loosely on the story of Yip Man, all right?
Okay.
Now, the spelling thing is something that, you know, I've taken aim with, or aim at, I should say. In certain legal documents, Yip Man had his name spelled IP.
Mm-hmm.
But in other legal documents, he had it spelled YIP. And pretty much for his entire life, when his name was spelled by any of his students, which is not confirming of anything, they used YIP. Moyet, a very close student of Yip Man, spelled it YIP. Bruce Lee spelled it YIP. Leung Ting spelled it. Everyone spelled it YIP. Even his sons, Yip Cheng and Yip Chun, spelled their own names YIP. Okay? and so it seems that in certain legal documents, he used that spelling. Now, on his ID card said Ip Yat. It wasn't even Yip Man. And I've heard on his Chinese Wikipedia page, there's some interesting stuff. You want to find some interesting stuff about Chinese Kung Fu people, don't look at their English Wikipedia page. Look at the Chinese one. And obviously, if you don't speak Chinese, get someone who does and have them, because the stuff that's on the Chinese Yip Man Wikipedia is way more interesting. Now, of course, Wikipedia changes every now and again. People come in there. Sometimes they vandalize it a little bit.
Oh, damn.
But at one point, someone, and you could tell who contributes, right? There was someone who had contributed a lot of very interesting points about Yip Man on the Wikipedia page. And there was a note in there that because Yip Man fled China, because he was a member of the Kuomintang Party. The Kuomintang Party was the opposing party to the Communist Party. So basically, if you were a Kuomintang member, you better get the F out of town or you better start bowing down to the Communists right away. Otherwise, they're going to boot your ass, right?
Damn.
So he basically left China very suddenly, all right, to put it mildly. And there was something in the Wikipedia page, in the Chinese version, which alluded to the fact that even when he was in Hong Kong, which was British controlled, so he, in essence, does not need to fear the Chinese anymore once he's in Hong Kong, but he still had a bit of a fear of some kind of retribution from the Chinese government. And that may be one of the reasons why he had kind of a nonsensical version of his name on his ID card. Because his ID card did not say IPMAN. It said IPYAT, Ip Yat.
Okay. On the run.
Yeah. So there is some speculation that this was kind of a fabricated name altogether to, you know, keep himself somewhat hidden from, you know, people are still nervous about these things, right? Yeah. Okay, it's just like the old WT organization. I remember people had quit Sifu Imin's organization in the 90s, and when I would go to learn from them, they would still look out the window worried that Sifu Imin was going to find out they were teaching Wing Chun without his authority or something like that, right? I get it. It's like with people, they're almost institutionalized, like people who've been in jail for a very long time. You can't get them out of that mindset, right? Because shortly before Yip Man passed away, he formed a martial arts association separate from the Wing Chun Athletic Association. And in that, in those papers, which you can find online, he spelled his name YIP. And it was called the Yip Man Martial Arts Association, YIP. Uh-huh. And that was in September of 1972. And he died in December of 1972.
Mm.
So pretty much right up until he's about to croak, all right? He decided that YIP is kind of the spelling that he went public with. But when you look at things like the, because I'm such a nerd, the Wing Chun Athletic Association, the premises, which I've shown you where it is there, over there in Mong Kok. My wife is a lawyer. So actually, she actually went into some government website in Hong Kong. Oh. And you can find the information, the public information about who owns different buildings. And so I asked her, I said, I want to know about the unit of the Wing Chun Athletic Association. Can you look it up? We had to pay, I don't know, $12 or something like that. Oh, wow. And then you get the public records. So I have the public records of the
association.
Of the space. You know, it's not the whole building because different people own different lots in there in the building, right? I looked specifically up that one, right? And in it, which is the official, official government papers, Yip Man's name is spelled IP in there, all right? Even though...
Wow.
Even though in when he formed his own association a little bit later, he decided to spell it another way. So it's a question of which one really had the legal bearing. Like, you know, it's not very clear. I'm sure that legally it was probably IP because that's where it was, but I don't know if Yip Man himself really gave a crap about those spellings because he seemed to be a bit ambiguous about how he himself did it, right? So, and Tang Sang's name is also on there, which is interesting because Tang Sang was basically one of the guys who fronted the money for that because he had the money. Later, when Tang Sang was under investigation, there was basically a lien put on the premises. And all of that is in the public record. When Tang Sang was under investigation in 76, it's like there's a kind of a lien on that property. And it says, so I have all the, like, I'm such a nerd. I look up, I have all that stuff, right? So that's why I saw Yip Man's name spelled that way there. But it's you know, I mean, for me, obviously, everyone is now spelling it IP Man because that is how the that's how they use it in the film. And, you know, every time I write an article for Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine, I send it YIP and the guy corrects it IP, right? Because there's a proofreader at Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. So much so at the point now that when I write these articles, I just write it IP Man because I know they're going to change it, right? Even though for me, it's kind of like, I don't know. And for me... phonetizations matter. I mean, it's pronounced yip, yip. It's not a hard Y. It's not yip, but it's not ip.
Mm.
Okay, it's yip, yip. Sixth tone, lowest tone, yip. All right, there's a Y sound in there.
Okay.
And the number of people who've walked into my school and said, I love IP, man. All right, and, you know, and I've said it before on the podcast, and I think people don't realize how bizarre this is. I've literally had people walk into my school, see the photo of Yip Man on the wall, and say, oh, I saw the movie about Yip Man called IP Man. And just like kind of looking at them.
In the same
sentence. And I also think it's a kind of a funny twist of irony that the director for Yip Man is Wilson Yip.
Wilson Yip.
And Wilson Yip. And it's the same surname. And Wilson Yip spells it YIP. So I've tweeted a couple times. I said, repeat this slowly. Wilson Yip directed Ip Man, all right? Because it's the same surname. Yip is a common Chinese surname. You know, even my, I have a nephew in Hong Kong, you know, through my wife's sister's son, right? So he's my nephew, right? The surname is also Yip, and they spell it YIP, all right? So because there's no standard phonetization, all right? Some people legitimately spell it IP. People in the government with that surname, I've seen it spelled IP, and other people spell it YIP. It's not standardized.
Hmm.
So it can be spelled both ways. YIP is the more accurate of the two. But IP now, for our late grandmaster, has been shoved down our throats so much that if you change it now, you're, you know, you you're going to have to face an angry mob of people, right? Yeah. The beginning of the IP man spelling really didn't come into place until 1991 when they published the genealogy of the Wing Chun family. And that seemed to be really be the first time when even the Yip brothers decided to change how they spelled their own name. Because I have books by Yip Chun in my house. That's where he spelled it YIP.
YIP.
All right. And like multiple books, right? Yeah. And then suddenly after 91, there was a bit of a revisionist take on their own name. So apparently everyone had remembered, oh, wait, no, that's not how we spelled our name, some nearly 20 years after their father had passed away. Right? Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners, if you're a Wing Chun practitioner, especially from the WT or Learning line, and want to get really personalized immersion training with me, you can now apply to do an immersion course with me here in NYC, or if you like the sun, in my Florida home near Orlando. These courses are for instructors or anyone who's serious about learning the art in detail and working hard. I teach in program blocks like Siunam Tao, Chum Q, Buji, Wooden Dummy, and those include the Chi Sao theory, fighting applications, and training methods as well. If you're really serious about learning Wing Chun, check out the link in the description below to find out about applying for a spot. For those of you who are not quite ready to do full private immersion training, you can also apply for a spot at either our winter or summer intensive training camps. We have a few spots available for non-city Wing Chun students, so apply today. A link for those options are in the description below. And now back to me. So anyway, that's a little bit of a background on that.
Yeah.
The main fight scenes that kind of tickle my fancy for the first Yip Man movies, one, where he has the first fight with the challenger, which is a more of a friendly match between two martial arts colleagues, right?
Love, it's not like
a
matches.
Yeah, I love friendly matches. If only they went the way they went in movies, not the way they do in real life, they always turn unfriendly, because no one wants to lose in a friendly way, right? Yeah. So that first fight there, I think, actually has a pretty decent display of Wing Chun from Donnie Yen. The second fight that I really like in that film is when he finally fights the northerner, played by Fan Xiuwang, right? In his house, in his mansion, right? The northerner had basically come down to Fatsan, and he's challenging all the local martial arts school leaders,
guy,
right?
Yeah.
And basically beats all of those guys. And then
brutalizing.
Yip Man in the movie is the only one who doesn't have a martial arts school. Because Fatsan, the town where Yip Man's from, is very famous for producing a lot of kung fu schools and kung fu masters. You had Charlie Futt in Fatsan, you had Hong Ku. Wong Feihong is from Fatsan, Yip Man is from Fatsan. All these are famous kung fu masters come from this one town.
Mm.
And so it could be, I don't know if whether the challenge part is historically accurate, but the fact that you would have come to Fatsan at that time and seen multiple martial arts schools, I don't know how open and how public they were, but they should technically at that time be multiple martial arts schools of different styles. They may be a little bit more private, the schools, than the film made it seem like more like public schools. But there would be a number of famous styles represented at that time. So basically the Northern comes in, and it's the kind of the classic, Lam Kun Bak Toi, which is the Southern fists versus the Northern kicks or the Northern leg.
Yeah.
The Northern styles being known for their footwork and leg techniques, and the Southern styles for their fist fighting techniques. And so he comes in and he basically, challenged all of them. Now, what I really like about it is, aside the fact that Yip Man is obviously a movie about Wing Chun and stuff, but I think Fan Xiuwang's performance is great. I think he's so good. Like, he's so good in that movie as a bad guy that it's a shame that he wasn't the final villain. Because if you watch that movie, he comes in, he kind of beats up all the local masters or whatever, and then he hears about Yip Man, but Yip Man doesn't actually have a school. He doesn't have a public martial arts persona. He's very private. And eventually he goads him to have a fight with him in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the midway point of the movie. And it's almost like a totally separate movie, because after he defeats, Zhao or whatever the character's name is, played by Fan Xiuwang, the movie shifts because now the Japanese have come in and they've invaded China, and now they've taken over, and now it's like a number of years later, and now the Japanese are the big baddies, and now it becomes all this, the fighting the 10
political.
Black belts. Well, it's also like the fighting the 10 black belts, and then the final fight with the Japanese general at the end.
Yeah.
And the movie takes a strong tonal shift at that point. Because in the first half, it's like, oh, this is kind of very humble kung fu master who's very skilled, but he doesn't teach openly, but all the martial arts talking heads want to know about him, and then he kind of gets involved. Like, that would have been a far more interesting thing, I think, to explore as an entire film for the first one.
Yeah.
All right? Because the Fan Xiu Wong's character, he's the best final villain for that movie. But it peaks right there in the middle, and then the film basically changes tone. And what I mean by changes tone is not just that it becomes darker and now you're in the kind of World War II with the Japanese and everything like that, but it also changes tones because up until that point, Ip Man, as played by Donnie Yen, is that kind of that archetype of a sifu, of a gentleman sifu, kind of scholarly like gentleman, rather than the kind of one-dimensional tough guy hero. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's like Donnie Yen is reluctant to fight. You know, the guy challenges him. He has the challenge match. He defeats Liu Sifu, but he doesn't want anyone else to know about it because he knows that that guy is still teaching and he doesn't want him to lose face. So, like, that is showing, like, the kind of culture of that archetype of what a Chinese Sifu should be. And then in that midway point after that fight, because even at the very end of the fight with Fan Xiu Wong, which is such a great fight, it's done so well, the choreography is so good. It's a shame that they didn't change the story a little bit and make that the final fight, because it would have been way better. You know, the northerner, he comes down because he wants to see what is better, northern martial arts or southern martial arts, right? And what's great is that Donnie's Ip Man, after he defeats him, in that very classic way that you would see in the old Quan Ta King, Wong Fei Hung films, mm-hmm. he wants to teach him a lesson, right? And, you know, he basically says to him, like, it's not like a northern or southern problem, because it's always this kind of classic, like, which one is better? It's like
territory.
Yeah, and so he says, "M'hai lam bak kun go man tai," which is like, it's not a southern or northern fist problem. Hai leige mantai. It's your problem.
Hey.
Right? And so basically saying, like, you know, it's not about which one is better. The conflict is you. You are the one with the conflict, right? And that's so great. And that is an awesome beat that closes that whole story arc in the middle of the movie.
In the middle
of the movie. And then suddenly the movie now is like, you know, the ominous rain and the Japanese. And now it's like, oh, he's poor and everything's been taken away from him. He doesn't have his mansion. They're trying to survive. And now there are these, you know, one-dimensional evil Japanese killing all the Chinese, which is true during that time. I mean, the Japanese occupation of China was 100% brutal. But spoiler alert, it wasn't the reason why Ip Man left China.
Mm.
Ip Man left China in 1949 for another reason, which we can't talk about on the podcast.
Whoa.
All right? Okay? So, or maybe I should say I basically alluded to earlier in this podcast because of political issues, right? The Japanese occupation was earlier in the 40s to the mid-40s. I think even before the mid-40s, I think the Japanese were already up at 43, 44.
Okay.
Ip Man didn't leave until 49. Right, but the film makes it seem like he leaves because of the Japanese. And the Japanese were not the baddies of Ip Man's life at that point. It was someone else, all right? Or some other group, I should say.
Gotta make someone a scapegoat, though.
Exactly. The thing is, look, the movie has to be distributed in China.
Yeah.
And China has very strict censorship boards. So you cannot have a film where Ip Man has a conflict with the communist government and that's why he leaves for, you know, in industrial capitalist Hong Kong, all right? Because then they would ban that film in China, all right? And all those actors would be blacklisted.
Mm.
Oh, but you could just say it was the Japanese. That's fine. Okay, fine. All right. So then they change it to that, right? So again, that's where, like, you know, now politics has to, it changes the narrative of film, right? But that I always found that was really jarring, that after that final fight, like, the movie changes tone and it's a different movie. And Ip Man, I would argue, the character of Ip Man is different in the second part of the movie than he is in the first one. Because in the first one, he is that very gentlemanly, scholarly, kung fu, wise sifu. And in the second half, he's somebody who has to, like, scrounge and survive to protect his family. Now, you could talk about that. That's a good beat for someone who who comes from this prestigious position in the town to now being someone just like everyone else who has to kind of scrounge and survive. And I get it, but I don't know if they did that part really well.
It's a weird transition.
It's a weird transition. And then when he starts fighting, when he has the other fight with the third fight of note in the movie, which is with the 10 black belts, which when you look at that fight in isolation, everyone always watches that fight. And the number of people have walked into my school, did Yip Man really fight 10 black belts? And it's like, no. And then you tell them that and you just see how, yeah, no, it was nine only. And then they're like, oh, you see how disappointed they are, right? It's the same people who are disappointed when you tell them that Bruce Lee did not really play ping pong with nunchucks and that was a Nokia commercial from the late 2000s. It's the same people, right?
Right.
This is the only the same people who get fooled. Yeah, the only same people who get fooled by that stuff, right? So, you know, but if you look at that fight scene by itself, all right, it's an awesome fight scene.
Yeah.
And it is, in my opinion, another really great display of Wing Chun from the first movie, which is, you know, if you really want to see how to do Wing Chun well on film
and violently,
you look at the first fight scene where it's the more soft way of using Wing Chun because he's not really hitting Liu Cixin with a lot of power because it's a friendly challenge, and then you have a slightly more martial arts duel with the Northerner in the middle of the movie, and then you just have this all out brutal destruction of these 10 black belts in this fight scene. The problem is it's a great fight scene, and it's definitely one of the crowning achievements of that movie in terms of choreography.
Yeah.
But you are now this is an older man who's now been beaten down from, you know, the poverty. Japanese occupation or whatever, and he fights like an effing superhero. Okay? And so I just found it's just fed up. It's so over the top. Like even just the idea that anyone could fight 10 people and survive. But I just find that it's story beat wise, it's off putting because Yip Man is supposed to be older. And here's the elephant in the room. Donnie Yen doesn't even bother to shave his head to look like Yip Man.
No.
You know, and basically Donnie Yen is just Donnie Yen wearing a Chang Sam. And he's like, okay, I'm Yip Man now. You know what I mean? You put a leather jacket on him and he's like, I'm the guy from SPL now, right? You put a gun around his waist. He's like, you know, from Kung Fu Killer, you know? And it's like it's just Donnie Yen wearing a different, it's just a wardrobe change.
I've been shaving my head for years waiting for someone to discover me.
Mm-hmm.
And say, yo, I want to put you in the next Yip Man movie.
Well, we've said it before. I don't know if the audience, we've said it before on the podcast.
Right.
If you take a light and shine a light on you, a spotlight, and have like a sheet or something where you can see the silhouette, your silhouette with your shaved head and your narrow ass, you look exactly like Grandmaster Yip Man.
Look, I've often thought that every time I walk in and bow to the photo, and I'm just like, am I bowing to Yip Man or am I bowing to Dre?
Shape of the head from the side, everything, right? You got it. So you could definitely play Yip Man's silhouette.
Okay.
Or his shadow.
Shadow.
Right?
Yeah,
the moment the camera actually pans you, they're like, that guy's not Yip Man. That's not a Yip Man. All right.
Hey, who is this man?
Yeah, who is this man, right? So, so like, he does, you know, Donnie Yen never bothered to shave his head, not even in the latter movies. And so you just see the difference between him, say, Anthony Wong, who's a better actor and played Yip Man in Yip Man, The Final Fight.
Right.
And he took great pains to, one, Anthony Wong shaved his head to at least look like Yip Man. He also, unlike Donnie, and maybe people don't realize these things, Anthony Wong attempted to speak Cantonese with a Fat San accent.
Ooh.
All right. Donnie Yen speaks Cantonese with his Boston accent, all right? Okay, like he's not even trying, okay? This is Donnie Yen in every role Donnie Yen has ever played, but he's just wearing a Chang Sam in this one here, right? And if it sounds like I'm salty, let's not forget that I waited for Harvey Weinstein for 4 hours and got an autograph box by Donnie Yen. This is all I got. I waited for Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
4 hours.
4 hours.
He was supposed to give me a shout out. Yeah. To my school city Wing Chun. And what I get from Donnie, I got this. But I didn't even get this from Donnie. I got this from someone else who felt bad that Donnie didn't hold up his end of the bargain.
Yeah.
And it's a box for Yip Man 3
for
the mug. And the mug is not in it.
Where's the mug?
So there you go. So if it seems like I ever come off a little salty on Donnie. All
just
right?
A pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Just a small pinch.
All right. Why didn't you shave your head? Try to speak with an accent? Try to pretend to be a little bit older than you were? So anyway. But I digest. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that fight scene, if you were to say, okay, this was a fight scene from a movie about a younger Yip Man. All right. I think it would be more in place, but it's just like, oh, so he was this gentlemanly seafood. No, he's an indestructible. It's not Iron Man. It's not Spider-Man. It's IP Man. All right. So he's just a superhero now. Right. And then the final scene outside on the platform with the Japanese general, I thought was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That general was played by an actual Japanese actor. Unlike in many Chinese films, they usually just have Chinese people playing the Japanese.
Okay.
But that guy was an actual Japanese actor, but not a martial artist. So he had to train just for that movie. And so Sammo put him on like a, you know, hardcore regimen of like stretching and kicking and doing martial arts. So they had to choreograph him to make it look like he was some kind of Japanese karate master. And when I first saw the movie, I thought, oh, that guy did a pretty good job, because when you have a good choreographer who knows how to make people look good, even who don't really know martial arts, and you know how to cheat it with camera angles and everything like that, you can make Keanu Reeves look like he knows martial arts in the first Matrix, right?
Exactly.
But when I later found out that guy was not a martial artist, and then I went back and watched it again, I was like, oh, okay, I see it now.
Sammo touch.
It's easy. The film has the Sammo touch. Yeah. That's why it works.
Mm-hmm.
But then Fan Xi Wong, in the middle of the movie, he is a martial artist. And he's so much better than the Japanese actor that it just really seems a shame that fight was the middle one and not the end one. They do. I know they meet later again, like, you know, when Fatan is under Japanese rule and like Fan Xi Wong's character is still around, and then they kind of have another fight. But the stakes are way lower because he's already beat him. Right.
Mm.
You're not like that worried about, like, he's already beat him in the movie. And if they fight again, you're kind of the stakes are kind of killed for that. Right. So, yeah, I felt that it was like, I don't know. And also some of the stuff that they did at the end in the final fight scene where they're comparing Donnie Yen's wooden dummy training to what he's doing to the guy there. I'm like, it's not what you use that for. It just was like there were little moments of slop at the end there. I was like, but famously, because they didn't know that they were going to make this into a franchise. At the end of the first Yip Man movie, they talk about, you know, Yip Man later became famous, like during the credits, and his schools in Wing Chun went all over the world, and they have a photo of Sifu Liang Ting in there, you know, leading probably a seminar somewhere in Germany, and I think they even have our friend Sifu David Peterson in there, and how it's gone all over the world. And then, of course, the photo of Yip Man and Bruce Lee at the end kind of tie that together a little bit, right? So, you know, on the whole, it's a very solid movie. It's by far the strongest and best of the franchise, in my opinion. But I just have a little issue with the tonal shift and what, in my opinion, is the best fight peaking in the middle of the movie rather than going at the end.
Okay.
So I figured, why don't we look at some of the fight scenes?
Yeah, why not?
And I'll talk about some of the Wing Chun that we see in there, and then we'll wrap it up from there. What do you think about... Maybe after we do this episode, we do another episode where we talk about like the other, because I can do a whole episode like this one on the first Yip Man movie. I cannot do an entire episode on Yip Man 2 without just me just going on and on and on about how much I think it sucks. Okay.
So you want to compress a few.
Well, no, I think, okay, we've done the Yip Man 1 episode. Right. Obviously, I'm fanboying over it a little bit because I think it's the best of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to maybe compare the other Yip Man movies, Grandmaster, Yip Man, The Final Fight, and the other in the Yip Man franchise, and we could do like, how would I rate them? Let's say there's six or seven of them. There's more now. There's more coming out of mainland China, but these are a Mandarin-speaking Yip Man is not something I can sit through for 10 minutes, let alone an hour and a half. So I'm going to discount all this new schlock crap that's coming out of mainland China. No. We'll talk about, obviously, the four Yip Man movies with Donnie Yen, Yip Man, The Final Fight, The Grandmaster, and The Legend is Born, which is the prequel. I'm going to leave that one out of it because that one kind of sucks. So we'll leave that one out of it, too, and we'll just talk about the aged Yip Man movies, right?
Got it.
And we can do like, we'll do an episode where we do the best of or whatever, and then people can comment about how they think we're wrong.
Looking
so
forward.
let's talk about the first fight scene where he fights with Liu Cixi, where it's the challenge, all right? Okay, so here we got the first fight scene of Donnie Yen's IP Man movie. And this is when the Master Liu comes in basically to challenge him. And it's a more of a friendly comparison. So this is not like a death duel or anything like that. Mm. And let's go ahead and take a look at that here.
Oh, yeah, I remember my man with the hat.
That's right.
Looking
this guy had actually tree. Learned some, the actor had actually learned some Wing Chun from Sifu Leung Tang. All right, here we go. Look, he's got the Phoenix Eye Fist. And Donnie Yen inexplicably starting with the Siunam Tao form with his thumb sticking
every
out.
Every fight should all start right. like that.
Though. Yeah, I know. So some basic parrying, right? He's not using a super aggressive Wing Chun tactics. Catches, a little bongso, a little pole pie action.
A little Lao Gurk the hell out of here.
Driving him back, running. Are you okay?
Something went up his butthole right there. Oh.
So now he uses the Zhongtao finally, all right? So some simple block and parry, laps out, dang dang. All right, elbow.
Yes.
And he's telling him when he hits, hey, like chain punches, right? Someone needs to tell Donnie to keep his thumbs in. It drives me nuts. Neck pole lifting punch, Wundemi technique, knee punch, face peel, control.
I remember the first time I got face peeled by my seeing.
So there you go. So a pretty solid solid application of Wing Chun. You know, he's obviously taking it easy, so he's using a more kind of defensive end of things. And there are a couple little beats in there. He does the lifting punch with the neck pull, which is kind of staple, kind of combining both Wooden Dummy and Chum Q together. Other movements in there look pretty solid. But yeah, one of the things, Donnie always has his thumbs out like this. Okay, he has his thumbs out in the chong out, even when he does a palm, whatever. This is just very poor technique, and I also find it actually looks really bad on camera. So not that Donnie is ever going to play Yip Man again, but man, if there was just someone on the set there that could have told him, all right, going to the hospital, not going to the hospital, fingers together in the chong cell. They don't have to be tight, but this is kind of nonsense. Yeah. So you can see why I like that fight scene. It's technical. There's a lot of good Wing Chun in there. And also it's lighthearted because it's not a real fight. It's more of a challenge.
Yeah, you just kind of go easy on an old man.
That's right. He's also supposed to be old too. So now we go what in my opinion is the crowning fight of the entire movie, which is where he fights Fan Xiu Wong. By the way, Fan Xiu Wong, he plays the Northerner. He's speaking Mandarin, but he's dubbed because he doesn't speak Mandarin that well in real life.
I thought he was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You heard his Mandarin and you were like, oh, his Mandarin's so good, right? So let's go ahead and watch that one. So here he is, Fan Xiu Wong being dubbed. His Mandarin is not that good.
I like this guy, though.
Yeah, it really comes at him.
Damn.
And you see, Yip Man is using very defensive tactics, just simple parries, moving around.
This guy's trying to take his head off. Stop kick,
yeah. The other guy has a lot of rage, a lot of power. Yeah. Yip Man is using the very kind of feminine way of using Wing Chun here. Parrying, moving out of the way. Bong Xiao turn. Trying to avoid contending hard force on hard force.
We did make that comment at the beginning of the fight about it being a woman's martial.
Yes.
He broke wife's
he said, well, pot. He said, I'll pay. Good. Oh, there's Donnie in his fingers again.
The fingers.
So, you cannot unsee it. And then nosy members of...
Yeah. Oh.
We're trying to watch, see what's going on.
What style is this guy doing, though?
Well, and I wouldn't say it's a specific style as kind of an amalgamation of a lot of northern tropes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Kidding, this, tricycle?
Yeah, this is supposed to be Yip Chun.
Yeah. Little brat. Ah! You don't be talking about my son like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But basically saying, like, if you fight too long, everything's going to be broken. So you have to just defeat him a little more quickly.
Ooh.
A little bit of wire work.
Ooh.
But the stakes of this fight feel a lot more real compared to anything that had come in the film up to this point. It was kind of a strange way to do the elbow strikes. Right? Yeah. But they want to make it look very clear, like Wing Chun, the footwork there. I don't know why he's constantly going back to this Cao Kun with the Zhong Cao, right? And why he's hitting him in the chest should be in the face. Oh, now he's awake.
No, I'm okay, man. I'm okay. This is sort of a friendly battle, no? That's why I hit him in the chest.
Yeah, but Yip Man is not trying to maim this guy. He's also in his house, right? But when the sword comes out, it's kind of like, all right, now it's real.
Now it's also,
what kind of nonsense is that you're going to attack someone who's unarmed with a sword? But would have been a great opportunity for them to showcase some of the Wing Chun weapons at this point instead of just, let's just show how badass he is that he doesn't need, you can give him a feather duster.
Your feathers, bro. What? Whipping him. Oh, no.
Yeah, looks like something more out of the Fong Sai Yuk movie than the Yip Man movie.
Oh, wow. Whipping his ass, literally.
Yeah.
Oh, under the arm, got him. His accuracy is.
Yeah. But had you built up this character more, and then you could have made this a more prolonged fight with slightly higher stakes, it would have been, in my opinion, a much better final fight. Because Fan Xie Wong is so much better than that Japanese actor in the final fight. Oh.
No.
Right in the C-foot.
His ass hurt.
Yeah. Here we go. Kung Fu's not too bad. My northern style has lost to your southern style. And here's where he says it. It's your problem. Right?
Yeah.
It's a great line.
It's not about style. It's about you.
Yeah, it's not about North and South. It's about you.
The way you're using it.
Yeah, it's your problem,
jerk.
Okay, and now, probably, I think the last fight, you know, that one with Fan Xie Wong is the best one in the movie. But the most famous one in the movie is the fighting, Da Sap Go, fight the 10 black people. I want 10, right? Yeah, he wants to fight 10, right? So let's talk about that one a little bit. Okay, so now we go to the most iconic fight scene, which is the... I want 10. All right. Ngo yu da sap go. I want to fight 10. There we go. Are you crazy?
Are you crazy?
No, I am not crazy. I am a superhero. Didn't you see the first half of this movie? No, wait. No, I am a superhero now.
He's like, what? Crazy mama.
Yeah. He wants a lot of rice, that's why. There's always some mousy dude that you can't stand, some sidekick.
Yes. That's the same one from Chinese Connection.
The fact that you called it Chinese Connection says everything.
That's what I know. Man.
But you see, like, for the aged Yip Man, this is, like, a bit of a stretch. But had this been, like, a flashback or something like that?
If they would have put this earlier in the movie and then flipped that northerner, the N. Oh, yeah, the potato. That's a potato, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, a piece of bread. You can never figure out what that was.
It's some kind of carbohydrate.
Carbohydrate.
He's got a high carb diet.
He's on the carbs, bro. You need to cut back on the carbs. Oh, man. Oh, no. Be easy on him, Yip.
No.
Oh. Closing the gap. Face stomp.
Love face stomping dudes.
I see, like framing. Very similar to the headlock defense, yeah.
Woo!
Here we go.
Ah.
Chain kicks.
Right. Ouch. Ouch.
All right. Straight punch. Moving out of the way. Yeah, some solid, decent Wing Chun sweeps. He's spending too much time chain punching this guy. You got to pay attention to the other people there. he stomped the other guy, which is a better tactic when you have multiple attackers and spend so much time chain punching one person while everyone else waits for you. It's pretty solid.
Damn, face peel of death right there.
Yeah. Downward.
I like that.
Yeah, there's some good simultaneous action. These beats here are really clean. They actually, that's the same choreography he used for Leo Sifu at the beginning. Mm. They kind of almost went beat for beat on that. This here, I don't like his stance, kind of crotch first in front of the guy. It's a little unstable. He should have done a kwaisat or a kneeling knee to control the guy on the way down. This guy's like, oh, man.
He saw what happened to everyone else.
Yeah, he saw what happened else. Nah.
I mean, should I or shouldn't I? Oh.
It was solid. This here's a little fun.
Oh, no.
And then, of course, they have to show, why do we have that funny stance in Wing Chun? So you can hold the guy in between your knees while you pound him and then let it go. That's a cool beat, though. I like that, where he's holding him there and shum and he lets go.
Oh, the knuckles.
It's the top two knuckles. Those are the wrong knuckles, son. Bro. Oh, look at that. What are we doing, karate now?
No.
It's not Wing Chun? What's going on?
Top two.
And also a little gripe about after that scene.
Mm.
When you look at his fists after he's beaten all of them, the middle two knuckles are the ones that are bloody.
Right.
You just look at that and you go, like, where was the Wing Chun consultant there?
No.
You know, that said, actually, in Wing Chun, we punch with the bottom three, so those are the ones that should be bloody, not those here. I think he was either the top two, like in karate, or was the middle ones.
He
I don't remember.
He got stuck on a train or something.
Yeah, but it wasn't right, and that kind of bugged the hell out of me. And now we have the final fight between Donnie Yen and the Japanese general, so let's go over that fight scene a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's like going out to the gallows. And here, you know, talking about the differences between Chinese martial arts and Japanese martial arts. You need to have this nationalistic stuff in there for these films to sell in China.
Mm-mm-mm.
This is what the Japanese never understood.
Mm-mm-mm.
You don't deserve to learn Chinese martial arts.
Wow, he got up like a G.
Like a G, yeah. On your toes.
Yeah.
And now that you know this guy's not a martial artist, you see it a little bit more in the choreography.
Okay. Yeah. Does he know Yip Man's from Boston?
Oh, he's bending his thumb there finally.
Oh, this guy again.
This dude.
He's always like in the trees. And
And there's obviously a lot of stunt doubles here. You're going to see a lot of moments where you see the back of that actor's head, but he's being stunt doubled by
different haircut.
Someone else. Yeah, slightly different haircut. It's Donnie Yen fighting himself.
Uh-oh. Cuff. Let me put my cuffs on, bro. Ooh, he's trying it. There he is. Hey, this is the...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and you can see they use a lot of angles to and away from the camera to kind of hide certain beats. You can see a lot of stunt doubles in there, especially when he's doing the kicks. They use the Japanese actor for a lot of the hand stuff in close because they can kind of fake that. But whenever he's doing all those kicks and stuff, you'll see it's usually a wider shot. And it's
a nice breakdance move right there.
It's another actor. So it's a stuntman.
Oh. Chun Zhao.
Yeah, it's a weird traditional Wing Chun leg grab. So a lot of the same beats from the 10 karate guys fight. But, of course, this general has a easier time countering some of these things.
Mm.
It's the traditional Wing Chun spin kick. Joking.
Yay.
People joking.
Joking. They don't have a spin kick. Wifey's coming.
Yeah, she was there for all of
front
his fights.
Front thrust. Okay.
See, and now he does beat straight out of the dummy, and then they have to have the flashback to the dummy. And though this is literally not at all what that movement in the dummy is for, but, you know. Here, the dummy is not a representation of the person. Here, the person is a representation of the dummy. This is unfortunately how many people. There's a little paijang action. Right.
Hey!
There you go. Chop.
He didn't get to use the bill.
The bill, G.
The bill genius. He put the bill away on him.
And there you go.
Whoa.
And you're done, son. And then, of course, what does he do? He gets shot for his efforts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I found those kind of a fun selection of fights.
Oh, man.
Those are the main fights, in my opinion, of the first IP Man movie. Of course, he gets shot in the end, you know, because he's got a superhero status. I mean, he got to get shot.
I mean, everyone got to get shot in the movie here
at
and
some
there,
point.
You know?
At some point, is Yip Man? What is your first? What is your favorite of all the IP Man movies, the Donnie Yen ones?
What is my favorite?
Yeah,
of the IP, the number one.
Number one.
But number three is close favorite.
Yeah, because you like Mike Tyson.
Yeah, because yeah. That character was a real character.
He was. You got to see whose fist is the fastest.
Right. No, I actually like the elevator scene in Yip Man 3.
Yeah. So yeah. To be fair, two, three, and four had moments, but collectively the films were kind of trash fires.
Schwag.
All right, cool. Hey, man, this was a lot of fun. I look forward to doing more of these. The next time we tackle this, let's go and talk about all the IP Man movies collectively and see which one is the best. I look forward to doing that. Right. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, Kung Fu Genius fans, well, what did you think about my basic breakdown of the first IP Man movie? Do you want me to do more of this, or would you rather me stick to talking about Wing Chun, Kung Fu, and other assorted nonsense? Let me know in the comments below. And as always, I'll see you guys next time.
Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters. You surpassed us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
You've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, though.
Yes, I have. Well, just watched it the other day.
Famous tune. Oh, yeah.
Oh, chicka-chicka.
That's by Yellow, right? Uh-huh. And, so you're basically a skinnier version of Dieter Meyer.
Dieter Meyer.
And, Dre, you're kind of a really skinny version of Boris Blank.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you're welcome. You should take it as a compliment.
Coming from you.
Okay, so let's take a look at the very first...
This guy.
I'm ready.
All right, let's get started. Takes his headphones off.
I couldn't.
Sweet.
Jacked up.
Mary Jesus. Okay. Holy shit.
It's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
Oh, thank you.
Good job, man.
Oh, thank you.
You always do better in that outfit.